G'day and welcome to another episode of the Luke's Lowdown podcast. Today's guest, well, he's got a story like we all do, but it is mind-blowing to say the least. I've got the main man, Michele Graglia, and I've been following this guy for a couple of years, realized recently that we have some mutual friends that was like, right, I've got to get him on the podcast, because one of the things that stands out to me about Michele's story is that he is real life proof that anything can happen to anyone, anywhere, and at any time. And that will make sense a little bit as we go forward. And the other thing that stands out about his story is that we can change at any given time in our lives and move in a different direction. And you know what? We can still be successful in that after we've done something for a very long time. So you might be thinking, who is this guy and why is he on the Luke's Lowdown podcast? Well, with that as context, here's a very short list from a very long list of achievements that Michele has accomplished. He has won ultramarathons all over the world. And to name a few, Badwater 135, just throw that out there, Moab 240, the Yukon Arctic Ultra, and the 175-mile road race, Ultra Milano to San Remo, which I believe is his hometown, if I did my research correctly. And this 175-mile road race in a course record of 31 hours and 49 minutes. Michele, how are you, my friend?
Look, what a beautiful introduction. Thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to connect with you today. I'm doing great.
Good. Good to hear. You're out on the west coast of the US and I'm here in sunny but windy London. And we have connected through a mutual friend, Simone. I want to give him a shout out. And as we sort of mentioned offline, and most of my listeners will know this series of the podcast, it's not just all about your story. So I think long and hard about the first question I ask all my guests, and there I could have went in so many different directions with you. So I came up with this. It's a relatively simple question, but I'm really intrigued myself. So you ready for this?
Let's go.
What do you enjoy doing when you're not running?
Thinking about it. Well, I think it's, you need to find a good balance in between, running is of course a stressor to the body. And so I enjoy activities that allow me to basically recharge. So whether I'm watching documentaries or reading books, I like to expand my knowledge beyond, the running world, of course. And very much fascinated by the Eastern philosophies and way of life, especially given by older philosophies, older religions, that I find it to be very relevant, especially nowadays in the troubled times that we are experiencing, not just as an individual, but as a society. And so that's pretty much my go-to. It's a body resting activity, but it's a very mind challenging task.
It's stimulating to undertake. Right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, I've definitely read a few books and followed a few pieces from Eastern philosophy. Just out of curiosity, what are the last couple of books you've read?
Well, I'm very much into. I'm not a religious person to begin with. I pursue spirituality. Most of the teachings that very much resonate with me come from Taoism and Buddhism, old Vedic, teachings. But let's say the last book that I read is The Power of Now by Toll, and it's actually the third time that I'm reading it. It's one of those books that every time you read it, you assimilate it better. and certain concepts just because they're so simple but so hard, they resonate and they stick to my mind better. So those are types of books that you have to kind of dig into it and reprocess as also your process of growth comes along. So it's a very fascinating read. Yeah. I find it to be very fascinating. I recommend it to pretty much anyone.
Yeah, I've read it a couple of times, and it's really interesting that you say that this is your third or fourth time for reading The Power of Now, as I'm actually reading Man's Search for Meaning for probably the fifth time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like over the course of maybe like 8 or 9 years. But yeah, it is the same type of book, as you read it the first time and it blows your mind about just the story that it's through. Mm-hmm. And then you read it the next time and you're like, wow, like that's a learning lesson that I can apply in my life. And you read it another time, as you said, it evolves as you read it and you dive into it and you think about it on a deeper level. And I totally understand, like, just for one example, The Power of Now by Toll can have that effect on people. And I think a lot of those books, we miss the true underlining message when we read it the first time, because we're reading the words on the page as a story.
Yeah.
But we sort of have to take away a concept of the story and apply it to life. Is that how see these books as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, as you said, it's been through the course of, you know, a few years that I've read it and reread it and read it again. And I think it comes along with the understanding, with your understanding. So, you know, something that I read 3 years ago resonated with me up to a certain point, but just because I wasn't there, I wasn't ready to receive that teachings, then it kind of flushed through as, you know, water on rock. Nothing kind of got any deeper than the superficial level. But then, you know, as you grow, you let certain understandings, or, you know, you widen your awareness, you know, you're ready to become fertile soil and allow that teaching to go a little deeper and stick with you.
Where did you learn, teach yourself, pick up this way of thinking?
You know, I pretty much always been fascinated with broadening my awareness and consciousness. It's always been, you know, I always question, we're kind of getting into a hole, but, you know, in a rabbit hole. And, you know, I've always been kind of, you know, how can I put it? I never really accepted dogmatic and, you know, the dogma and religion, especially coming from a very Catholic place. You know, I was born and raised in Italy, you know, church, school, church on Sundays, and masses here, masses there, rituals and stuff. And I never really, you know, it never really stuck with me. I always found a lot of holes. And again, I don't want to get too deep in this one, but the point is, I've always been looking out for something that would give me that, I don't want to say meaning, but that would kind of allow me to explore myself and understand my own spirituality, not given by the societal indoctrination.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I gotta say, I never really dug deep in it until I came to the US. That's when my process of growth kind of exponentially exploded. I think because in many ways I was trying to develop myself on so many different levels. So, you know, the initial part was, you know, reading Les Brown, Tony Robbins, all these self, you know, development books, and how to be successful and all of that stuff, how to pursue the American dream and whatnot, you know. But, you know, in many ways, all of these kind of gave me the boost to explore more and more. And as my, you know, my career took me to New York. At the time I was, you know, in the fashion industry, and finding that moment, that crack, you know, I had to confront a pretty, I would say the most difficult time in my life. I had pretty much an existential crisis, a middle age, crisis. I was only 27 years old, but that allowed me to confront myself and eventually find, if you allow me the word, a higher calling, a higher pursuit of my, you know, of myself and my life and what I'm doing, just because of what I was doing at the time just wasn't working. You know, I was pursuing the material excesses and I was pursuing what society tells us that we need to pursue to be successful. But, you know, once I kind of reached that, I felt pretty empty. And so I was looking for something that would give me fulfillment more than, you know, more than achievement. And so once I started digging into that, then eventually the spiritual search came along and allowed me to broaden that.
Yeah. So that's very well put. And we get a bit of a sense of your personal journey. And you mentioned a couple of bits in there. So we're going to go back just very briefly to give people a bit of context of exactly what happened exactly. And I've got a very specific question within all of that that I want to ask. So I'm going to give the really, really short version because, you know, you have an amazing book out called Ultra and people can find that everywhere that tells your story. And people can dive into that. A mutual friend of ours, Dr. Rob Bell, speaks extremely highly of the book. And I was chatting with him actually yesterday and he was just like, the book just blows your mind. So people can go out and find Ultra on Amazon, on everywhere. We'll talk about that later. But so, Michele, can I call you Mickey?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Much easier.
Yeah. Well, also Aussies like to shorten everyone's name. So
let's do it. It's actually my Instagram name. So that works.
All right, cool. All right. So you work for your family's business, export business in flowers and stuff like that. Was it
ornamental greens? Ornamental greens. Yeah.
So went out to the US to help with that. I'll throw out there that, you know, you were studying law and you're like, yeah, I'm not going to do that anymore. So you're
smart. After the first semester, I'm like, nah, that's not for me. I was doing pretty good, but, you know, I already knew back then, 6 months, a year into it, I'm like, you know, this is not going to be my life.
So you go out to Miami and long story short, you get spotted by a modeling talent agent who quite literally, and I mean literally from the research I've done, signed you on the spot.
Yeah, that same day.
The same day. Like it, and people, hopefully you're listening and you remember the intro that I said about things can happen at any time to anyone, anywhere. You get signed from a massive, big international modeling agency, and for the next period of your life, you are, you know, a male supermodel. You know,
living it up,
living life, everything you could imagine that supermodel does, and the parties and the fast life and all the rest that Mickey goes into detail in his book. And then you move to New York to continue to pursue that. And you have this crisis that you just very eloquently talked about. Is that pretty much a synopsis of what happened?
That was beautifully put. Yes.
So here's the question, right? You're an international supermodel. I'm going to call you that because I think that's really cool. You're probably over it, but anyway, living a glamorous jet setting life.
Yep.
What was the exact moment or when was it like that a thought or the initial conversation started in your head to say, Mickey, you've got to change? What was, as Dr. Rob Bell would say, what was your hinge moment for that?
Yeah. I call it breaking point.
Okay. Yep.
But yes, that was my, the switch. The pivotal moment was in the spring of 2009. So just about a couple of years after, two and a half years after I started, you know, this journey into the modeling world, the modeling career. You know, it brought me to travel the world. It brought me, as you just said, you know, to live that fast life and pursue that glamorous lifestyle, if you want to call it that. You know, I had the fortune in many ways. You know, I come from a 5,000 souls little town in the inland of Italy. And, you know, finding myself in New York working for the biggest brands, the biggest photographers. And, you know, it was almost like a dream. The problem is, it wasn't my dream. You know, I realized very, very soon that there wasn't any, I couldn't find any purpose. And the detrimental lifestyle that came with it, because you have to play the game. You know, that's where it matters. It's not really in the castings. It's about the connections that you're able to create in the social life that allow you to enter the door. And so you need to be part of that scene to be able to be successful. And so I did play the game, and I did play it right. I did play it hard, if you know what I mean. It was at the very beginning, it was almost like, hard to believe, because again, you know, coming from a small town, finding myself with these celebrities and, you know, important people, and, you know, living that type of life and rolling in Rolls Royces and, you know, hanging out and bottles and tables and all of that stuff. But came a time where, you know, the whole sex, drugs, and rock and roll crushed on me. And I came to confront myself one cold spring night, back from a famous photographer's birthday party, that I walked back to my apartment, and I was on the 15th floor of a high rise in Battery Park overlooking the Statue of Liberty, that, I came to that hinge moment, that breaking point where I was, you know, I just sat outside the windowsill of my apartment and I contemplated, put everything, you know, bring everything to an end. And that moment right there, you know, it lasted a very long time, because, you know, you're like, what are you complaining about? You know, you got everything you want. You're just like a, you know, first world problem, I guess. But I think that first world problem is actually the, you know, our generational crisis. You know, we don't have, at least for now, we don't have major wars like our grandparents or great-grandparents had to deal with, but I think our spiritual crisis is much deeper and much more painful.
So in that moment, whether it was actually right when you were sitting on your balcony and contemplating that, and thank you so much for being open and sharing that as well. I really appreciate it. I know it's not easy. When was the first time you started to have some positive thoughts about moving forward, and what were they?
It was right there. It was right there, right then. Right at dawn, actually.
Yeah.
And as the sun rose. Positive,
yeah, they're perfect, right? Absolutely perfect. What were those positive thoughts, and what were those thoughts and those contemplations like telling you?
You know, everything came around when I came to the understanding that at any moment, anywhere, anytime, as you said, you can change. Nothing is set in stone. And as cliche as it may sound, you know, once you hit rock bottom, there's only one way up. You know, there's only one way to go, and that's up. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I found myself in that position where I basically changed the way I looked at things. I changed my perspective in that moment. And so I came to the simple understanding that, okay, if this is not working, I'm 27 years old, mind, at that moment. And so I was like, you know, I have a whole another lifetime or two or three ahead of me to reshape who I am, what I'm doing, and do something that actually makes me feel good about myself, that gives me purpose, that allows me to get up in the morning and have a direction, follow a vision, something that is powerful, meaningful, and that, yeah, that is literally giving me the reason to get up in the morning.
So right now, today, as we're having this conversation, if you could call up yourself in that moment, or even the next day, let's say the next day, right? Okay, well, the same day, because you were there.
Yeah.
You went to bed, you got a few hours sleep and you got up.
Yep.
If you could call up yourself right now, knowing what you know today about yourself, about the world, your perspective of the world, your conception of things that are happening in front of you, what would you say to yourself, knowing all of that, when you've woken up that next day?
Follow your instinct, just like I have. For whatever reason, like I tell you, through that time, you know, that was the realization moment. But in between that realization and finding out what that, I guess, higher purpose, allow me the, you know, the term, there was another year and a half in between. So there was a lot of scrambling in the dark while I was still trying to keep my strength, you know, because I still had to work. I still had to follow that career. I had an apartment in Miami, I had an apartment in New York. So, you know, I still had to be productive. But I knew there was something out there. I was very much drawn to adventure and exploration. Didn't know what type of adventure and exploration.
How were you drawn to that? Why were you drawn to that?
I think it was one, an innate thing. I was born with that desire. And I think two, I was drawn towards it because of the situation that I was in that moment. I lived in New York. I felt very much caged in that concrete jungle. I felt caged in those blocks, in those tall buildings. People dream of living in these big cities, but to me, they're detrimental to your psyche and to your well-being. And here, I'm not here to criticize anyone's choices, but I think living in a city is a huge sacrifice. Doesn't matter how much money you're making, because you consciously or unconsciously sacrifice your true nature. We're not meant to live living on top of each other. We're not meant to breathe each other's air. We're not meant to be amassed in those metros. We're not meant to be working and barely see the sky. We're meant to be outside. We are creatures. We're nature. We are not part of nature. We are nature. And so I felt very much disconnected from myself and from the world. And so adventure was a way to get a breath of fresh air. It was a way to get out there, see the world, connect with it, and connect within.
So you were ready for this new life. You obviously had commitments that you still had to take care of. So you're open to a new life, right?
Yes.
You're viewing the world in a completely different way, and you're looking for options. And I think I've said this on pretty much every single episode that I've had, is one of the main themes I see with, you know, this series in particular, and speaking to world-class athletes, right, on this series, professionals and people who are just world-class, is the one thing that I hear and we talk about is curiosity. Like, you were curious for what's the next step.
That's absolutely right.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Don't be judgmental, be curious.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can learn so much about the world yourself in doing that. So then, the one thing that I've observed for the people I've spoke with and just how I view the world is, if you are curious, sometimes you need a spark. You need a light. You need a beacon to go towards.
Yes.
And for you, it was a book, correct?
That's right. Yes. A book that basically I stumbled upon around the Christmas time of 2010. So as I mentioned, spring 2009, Christmas time 2010, over a year and a half basically later, I eventually just randomly waiting for my back then girlfriend, now wife, in Union Square. I dove into, sorry, my little dog is. So I was waiting for her. I dove into this Barnes and Nobles at the north section of Union Square. And I see this cover, I see this cover right there in the sports and exploration area section. And for whatever reason, it drew me right in. I saw that image. I saw Ultra Marathon Man in like huge, you know, capital letters. I was like, what is this? I see this guy popping out of the band, muscular, you know, hair in the air, you know, looking free, looking strong. I'm like, this looks great. So I picked it up and I was like, you know, I knew about marathons, of course, but I never, ever heard of ultras, ultra marathons. What is this? You know, I was raised by this concept that the marathon was the ultimate feat of endurance. You know, that poor Greek guy, you know, he ran from marathons to Athens and he died. So, you know, you can't really go past that. But then you find out all of a sudden, then there's people nowadays that can run 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 marathons in a row without stopping. And that was mind blowing. That was mind boggling. And so, you know, I read that book, like I bought it. I read it, reread it a third time in a matter of days. And I was like, for whatever reason, I cannot tell you why. I mean, there's like a million reasons why, but no one that I can just pinpoint. It spoke to me. I related to the story. I related to the guy. We were very much coming to that same breaking point, close to the same age. He was 30. I was 27, 28 at the time. And I was like, you know, if he was a successful businessman having the same existential crisis, looking for something greater, something to pursue, something that will fulfill him. And I'm like, hey, if running these crazy distances in extreme conditions worked for him, maybe it might work for me. I always love running, the most primal and simple way of movement. Why don't use that to explore the world and see what's out there?
I love
and
it.
So I bought a pair of shoes and I started running laps in Central Park, and here we are.
So for those who haven't been able to read between the lines, the book is Dean Karnazes's Ultra Marathon Man.
That's right.
And I read it many years ago as well, when I was still a footballer, and I was the same way. I was just like mind blown that people run these distances. So as I said, like that mix of curiosity, and sometimes we can fulfill that curiosity in life and find our own path. But sometimes if you're open to, you know, being curious about your own life, about what's in front of you, about what could happen, then sometimes if you're got enough self-awareness and if you're open to let those beacons of light in, it can really, and I'll use your words, it can really speak to you, like you mentioned. Yeah. So, you know, that was sort of like the catalyst for shifting you into this new,
yes,
this next phase of your life.
Yeah.
And you throw yourself into ultra marathons, and I'm not going to go through one by one of what you've
right.
I've got a few different directions of where I want to go here. But the first question is, what is it that excites you about like running ultra marathons? And we'll get into it in a second, but ultra marathons, as I call them as well.
It's because it becomes absolute.
Elaborate.
Yes. It's not just a matter of how fast you can do it. It becomes a matter of, can you do it? And that to me transcends the sport, transcends the discipline, the competition of running, and becomes an absolute concept of almost like from an evolutionary standpoint, how far can I run as a human being? Here I'm finding out, I'm no longer competing against anyone. I'm no longer competing against the clock. I'm putting myself out there basically on an adventure to explore my realm, to explore my physicality, to explore my inner self, to explore the strength of my mind, to find out how far I can actually go. It's no longer taking the, you know, what's told, the status quo, saying, this is how far you can run, past that you can go. No, I can go way further than what I ever thought was possible. And so to me, as I said, it becomes exploration. It becomes an adventure. You put yourself out there knowing that things are going to go wrong, knowing that it's going to be hard, but it's about confronting that and seeing for yourself what you're capable of.
If there's marathon runners or even ultra marathon runners, say they do 50 milers and 50 Ks and even 100 Ks, right? Which, yeah, I already know you and I had the same sort of view on this, is people who run marathons are still absolutely amazing athletes, regardless of the time.
It's 100%. I respect any distance. Don't get me wrong. I respect 5Ks, 10Ks, and everything in between.
So if we've got people, say, in the endurance realm, marathon, going up, say, 100Ks, who are just like, there's no way I can run. I can't run longer. There's just no way I can do it, right? And it's not to do with time. It's not to do with training. It's not to do with anything. But they've got this block in their
head. That's exactly it.
If they're sitting down next to you now having a coffee, what advice would you give them, or what would you tell them if they have this mental block that, oh, I can't run any further than I already have?
Limitations are the ones that we put on ourselves. That's as simple as that. If you tell yourself that you cannot run past 100K, then that's going to be it. But you need to be open to be able, it's almost like, you know, there's a funny saying in ultra running, anybody could run an ultra marathon, but not anybody can. And it's not a physical thing. It's not a physical limitation, because as human beings, we all developed, we all evolved as runners, as pack hunters. And it's almost like saying a bird that cannot fly. No, you can fly, but if you've been caged all your life, then it's going to take a while to stretch out those wings and feel the thrill of the wind in between those feathers and feel the thrill of speed while you're flowing through the air. The same thing applies to running. It is the most natural and primal movement, active movement that we can do. And it is instilled in ourselves as human beings. So telling that you cannot, it's almost like it doesn't make sense to me. So here, the only barrier, the only limitation is the mind. And to break that barrier, you need to be open. You need to open up yourself. You need to open up your mental limits and simply put yourself out there. You have to have the courage to explore that, because it's almost like leaving the safety of the castle and venturing into unknown territory. And I elaborate this even further by saying that the reason why I keep considering considering ultra running an exploration, an adventure, it's because you are basically putting yourself out there in unknown territory to find out for yourself what you're capable of. I cannot tell you can't run past 100 miles, 100K, 200 miles, whatever distance you want to go, until you decide for yourself, hey, I'm thrilled by the idea, the curiosity to see how far I can go. And that this to the day, you know, throughout the years, my motivation and inspiration has morphed and changed because of my personal growth and understanding and all of that. And there have been times that it was focused on the accomplishments, and it was focused on beating the competition. And that always took me away from the true purpose of what I was doing. What I realize nowadays is that every single season, you have to reestablish that motivation. And to me, it always comes down to pushing the envelope. Mm. It's not about how fast I can go. I want to push the envelope to see how far I can actually go on my own two legs with the strength of my mind and the heart pounding in my chest.
What are a couple of things that other people could do that you do to strengthen your mind?
Oof, you need to silence the mind. You know, the mind is, using a Eastern philosophy saying, you know, the mind is a great servant, but a terrible master. I think in our society, in our Western society, we stress the power of the mind. You see the self-development books and, you know, success books and business stuff. It's always about the power of the mind. But I think there's a huge gap of understanding there. I think the true power comes from within. call it the heart, call it the soul, whatever we want. I think you need to have a higher, deeper calling to be able to shut down the barriers of the mind, or at least surpass, transcend. Just like you surpass and transcend your physicality in ultra marathons, you also need to transcend the limitation of the mind, because the mind will always tell you to take the easy way out. It's an evolutionary process.
How have you got to this point? What are some things that you've done personally to be able to do this?
I approached yoga, and eventually through the physical asanas, I discovered meditation. I've been practicing since 2013. I've been then developing more and more through the years, and came to understand how powerful meditation can be.
Meditation practice look like?
Well, meditation, of course, you know, the best way is to be still. Still, because you can, focus is the wrong word, but you can detach better. I do practice meditation when I run. I do practice meditation, you know, it's a movement meditation, but that's a more physically aware meditation, because if I'm running on a trail, I still need to be aware of the logs that I need to run and the rocks that I need to skip and everything, you know, all the hurdles and things that I need to be aware of. So there is a sense of flow that detaches you from the mind, that detaches, that allow you to kind of clear, you know, we often identify with our mind and our thoughts, not understanding that our thoughts are just like clouds in the sky. A lot of times they don't allow you to see the clear picture, because if you're thinking, Alan Watts said it, you know, if you're thinking too much, all you do is think. You don't really allow yourself to be. And so there is a flow, what some people call the runner's high. But I think the best type of meditation is the silent, still. And I do practice that almost daily, especially when I come to prepare for bigger events, where I strive to create a clear environment, trying to break down the barriers of not having any expectations, not setting any sort of pressure on myself. So not focusing on competition, not focusing on how I want to place, not having any of that, but simply erasing everything inside, kind of cleaning up, you know, and creating that safe environment, because the mind is a great servant. You can achieve anything you set yourself to, but you cannot allow the mind to get in between and your thoughts to make you doubt yourself, because the thoughts, just like clouds, are always going to be there. But you need to be able to filter those, use the ones that serve you, and discard the ones that don't.
For me, the way that I've translated that, so I'll remember that, and that's very eloquently put, is use meditation prior to events, and I do a very similar thing, is to create space to be.
That's absolutely right. To be present.
Yeah, exactly. And just to be where you are, because regardless of the distance of the race, like you could be running a road marathon and you still have to be aware of aid stations, other runners, gutters sometimes, you know, all these types of things. So you still have to be aware. You still have to be in the moment.
Yes.
But running on the trails and ultra running and trail running, and especially the distances that you run, I've never done any 200 mile races. They're on the list, so to speak, but it's one of those things where if you're going into an event and your head is really busy, I'm going to change my train of thought, and we're going to go in a different direction here, because I feel like this is going to be beneficial to our listeners, because I'm sure you and I could go into massive rabbit holes as a team.
Yes.
But I'm not sure the listeners want us to go that direction.
Right.
So I've coached athletes for decades and runners over the last decade specifically. And one of the things that I see all the time, and it's just part of life, is they can't wait to get to race day. Because they don't have to do anything else apart from run. And it's they turn up on race day fully stressed, and they use that race to de-stress. And it's almost counterintuitive to what we were just talking about. So you want to, because their mind is full and they use the first 30K, 40K of their 100K, 100 mile race to get rid of all of that. But one of the things that I know is not just personally, but from a physiological level and a psychological level, is that stress that has been built up for months and years and weeks and whatever, it's going to have an effect on your physical performance. So wouldn't it be cool if people could actually make a stand, for lack of a better phrase, to try and declutter their mind in the lead up to a big event? What do you think about that as an idea?
You put it together much better than I did. It is about, absolutely, it is about detachment and it's about presence. It creating a detached mind allows you not to think too much about what could be, what's been, allows you to be fully present in the moment. There's a mantra that I bring with me in every expedition, in every race, and sometimes even in training, and is as simple as right here, right now, because that's all you can control. You know, a lot of times, especially as a professional athlete, you want to win because, you know, the sponsorships, the accomplishment, because of this and that. There's a million reasons why. The only problem is you need to be aware of the fact that the outcome is not under your control. All you can control is giving your best, focused in the moment. Because eventually, the sum of each moment, the sum of each step, giving your very best, fully present, fully focused in each moment, eventually will bring you to the finish line. And if you did the things right, you come up on top.
Love it. I love it right here, right now. I've had some good matches on this series of the Luke's Layout podcast. That's right up there.
Awesome.
When things are going well in a race as planned, or just you're not in flow because you are still present. You know, like there's been times when I've been in flow and I tell this story to people and it blows my mind, blows other people's mind, is when I'm cycling, because I do a lot of long distance cycling as well.
Yeah.
But there was a time where I don't remember about 3.5 hours of my ride. Like,
yes.
On one side, that is really cool. But on the other side, that's friggin' scary.
How did I get here?
Yeah. Running's a little bit different because when you come to, you go, well, you know, I wasn't moving very fast and I wasn't going to fall very far. I'm on this trail, whatever. But when you're cycling on roads with cars and you can't remember the last 3 hours because you've been in flow in the zone, you call it. It's a different thing. So when you're not in flows, when you are actually conscious of how you're feeling and your surroundings in that moment, but things are going really well.
Yeah.
What is the conversation like between your ears?
It goes in between. I think it switches in between a constant self-check. How am I doing? What do I need? Because, you know, ultramarathons, it's about running long and perseverance and all of that, but it's also about self-management. So you need to be aware how much food, how much electrolytes, how much hydration you need at any given moment. But then there's got to be always a higher reason why you're doing it. And to me, that reason, as I said before, all the times that I put it on the expectation of placing or winning or breaking a record or doing something exterior, he always crumbled down on me. He always broke me down. Just because the effort is so outstanding that the simple thought of placing or winning, it just doesn't work, at least for me. It just doesn't burn hard enough as a fire for me to keep going and endure that discomfort for so many hours, if not days sometimes. So the motivation and inspiration is always the light in front of you that you need to pursue. And the stronger the motivation, the most solid inspiration you can create, because it's all part of our, calling, part of that, you know, what you established in the works in the months prior to the event. Just like physical conditioning, you have to establish that motivation and inspiration, the beacon of light that draws you to it. You don't need to push. When you're drawn to something, there's no effort. So you are enduring discomfort. You're going through that, but I tend to transcend that pain because my why is so strong of why I want to do this. Why did I put myself in it? That I can't answer the question. And I simply accept the pain as part of the journey. It's no longer something that stops me, but it becomes a partner of what you're doing, an inevitable part of your journey. And so, you know, once you switch your mind to that, you're unstoppable.
Yeah.
Nothing really can stop you. There's no setback. There's no pain. There's no nothing. You just go through it because you know that what you're doing, your why is greater than all of this.
You're speaking my language, Mickey. I absolutely love that. It's, you know, I do it myself and I practice it in training and as well as doing races and, you know, my clients is having that, that self-check.
You know,
because it really is like running ultras. If we take a 10,000 foot view of running ultras, it's talking about from a mental perspective, it's really just I'm trying to do everything I can to stop everything going wrong. And the best way to do that is to go through this checklist of things that I know that if I don't take care of them, they will go wrong and it can stop my race. And from one perspective, it's almost like, well, it's quite actually boring to a degree because every moment when things are going well, you're sort of going, okay, I'm motivated, so I can park my thoughts and my why for a second. Mm-hmm. But it's like, okay, eating, drinking, you know, lubrication, how's my pack, how's my electrolytes, if it's hot, salt tablets, if it's cold, am I warm enough, are my fingers okay, all this type of stuff, am I too exposed, all the rest of it. And then when you do that once, it's time to go back and do it again.
That's right.
So when I guess, when things are going well, I guess that's it. But like you've pretty much answered my second question is where do you go when things in your mind, when things are going wrong, but you know, your why is yet that big light, that beacon. And I said straight away, you're speaking my language. I had this whole thing that I talk about the why tree, that we don't just have one big why because it's something people say when I ask them, what's your why? And they say a reason. I ask them, well, why is that your reason? And then they give me a reason and say, well, why is that your reason? And normally you get to like two or three levels. So I talk about the why tree where you've got leaves on a tree, which normally like people say, oh, I wanted that flashy finishers medal. Or I want to say I ran a marathon. That's like the leaves on the tree.
Yeah.
You know, they're relevant. They make the tree complete and the leaves are very important.
It's exterior.
Yeah, exactly. And then
of yourself.
Then you've got the branches. Then you say, well, why do you want to say you've ran a marathon? Oh, because I want to show myself that I can achieve something if I work hard. And, you know, I really want to get fitter. Okay, they're the branches. Yeah. They're still a good why. But I said, well, why do you want to do that? And this is a real life example. And they say, well, actually, the reason why I want to do that is I want to show my kids and I want to be an inspiration to my kids to say that, hey, if you put your mind to something, you can train for like 4 or 5 months, dedicate to it, and then just keep putting one foot in front of the other as a metaphor or literally when you're running a marathon, that you can accomplish something you never thought was
possible.
Yep. That's the deep-rooted why. They're the roots of the tree. So the real reason why this person ran the marathon was not to say that they ran a marathon, not to take care of their fitness and do that. It was actually to inspire their kids. So
something deeper.
In saying that, at mile 20, when the wheels fall off in the marathon, do you know what she thought about? Not the finishing medal. She thought about her kids.
Yep.
And that's what pushed her forward. So it's really important, as I said, speaking the same language to dive into that why. And it sounds like that's something that you do on a regular basis. So absolutely love that. What I want to know is what has ultra running taught you about yourself?
You know, I consider ultra marathons spiritual journeys.
100%.
And the reason why I say this is because it allowed me through the years to dismantle every sort of indoctrination and societal conditioning that transcended the sport, that transcended the discipline, the physical sport of running. And by that, I mean, you know, I kind of circle back to the limitations. You know, we put ourselves in this box because that's how we are raised, you know, from, and the reason why I say it's, you know, we accept the status quo, we indoctrinate it, we are conditioned from a very young age to sit at a table and live this life and do this and do that. And this is how far you can go here. This is how much you can do there. And pretty much we accept that. We take that as you know, we accept it. As simple as that. We accept what we can do and what we cannot without ever challenging that thought. And so what did ultra running allow me to do is expand my mind to be able not only to, you know, break through those barriers on a physical and mental level, but also to connect within at a much deeper level. And every time, you know, it's almost like my reason now is always going longer and further, is because it's almost like a trip, like a trip on psychedelics, if you allow me to say that. It is, it's about the expansion of your awareness and your consciousness. It's detaching from all the physical entanglements and boundaries, and basically tread into uncharted waters. It becomes a connection that goes within and without. And the reason why I keep going is because, and I want to keep going further, is because what I realize is that the further I go, the deeper it gets.
100%. People have asked me, like, I dove into endurance sports, you know, head on, my first, in a very similar way to you. My first ever race, ever running race, was the Marathon des Sables. You know,
Wonderful.
6 months prior, I was a footballer. And then
I injured
myself and, you know, retired and basically escaped from life. And
you
know, all my listeners will know my story. Yep. But and then threw myself into MDS. And then I did the MDS and it was great. It was, you know, very eye-opening. But I wasn't attracted by races.
Yep.
And I say this because I was a professional athlete and it was all about results, basically. Yep.
Performance.
And I was like, I'm not interested. What is intriguing me, and my motivations back then completely different to now, was, well, how far, what if I can? How far can I go? That curiosity piece. And people ask me, why did you, you know, go and live high up in the Rua Mountains in Nepal and then run down Mount Everest in the world's highest ultra? Because I was like, I wanted to see what I was capable of. And then they're like, well, why was your first triathlon a double Ironman in the mountains in Wales? And I was like, because I knew the amount of training I did, I could go out and do an Ironman. I'm not interested in going fast. I'm not interested in that. I wanted to see how far I could go to, and there's a point to this, to have the experience of going so long that it opens up a new learning experience. And I've said this on, you know, probably hundreds of podcasts. I use ultra endurance sports as my own personal university.
100%. Beautifully, and wonderfully put.
Each event is like a new course. And you go and do that. You go and do the course. And it's like if you do the first day of a new course, it's like, I have no idea what all this means.
Yeah.
But if I'm open to it, over time, I'm going to learn that. And that is one of the big driving forces for me, why I do these long adventures that I do, is I'm not interested to try and qualify or go fast. It's like, I'm intrigued by how far I can go, because I know it's going to unlock something inside of me, because I'm open and I'm curious enough and I have this perspective that I know it's going to teach me something. And it sounds like, in the same way, but said in a different way, that's your view on why you do things like Badwater, 135 miles, Moab, 240 miles. And the last thing that I want to talk about before I let you go is the desert crossings.
Yes.
So you've come up with this project, the Transperfect Desert Crossings, and I'm going to let you very briefly explain it. But and then after you explain it, I want to know, what do you hope to learn from the journey?
You know, that was I had this dream. I had this vision. Right around that time when I discovered Dean's book. And, you know, this whole concept of being able to explore nature and explore its extreme sides on your own two feet kind of resonated with me loudly right from the beginning. And I had this vision right when I was in New York of crossing the most extreme deserts on the planet.
I had the same vision. Maybe we were thinking about the same thing.
Yeah. You know, it's a wild and weird dream, but you know, it wasn't about, again, it wasn't about the accomplishment of wanting to win races and put a name for myself and all of these things, but it was about simply exploring the extremes of nature and confronting myself in it. So, you know, of course it's like, yeah, I can say I want to climb the seven summits, I want to climb this and that, but you also have to develop yourself to the point and set yourself up to be able to do it. So, you know, it took a few years, and then 2018 came along, and, you know, in the summer of 2018, I had the great privilege of winning Badwater, which was the staple for me. So winning that race kind of gave me the confidence. It kind of proved to myself that, yeah, I did it. You know, I'm doing it. This is no longer just a vision. Now I'm actually pursuing that dream. And not only, you know, the reassurance is wrong, but, you know, establishing that this is the right vision, that I'm pursuing myself at the highest level that I wanted to, also allow me to tap into the, you know, financial possibility to do it. I started receiving, you know, major sponsorships. I started receiving the right amount of support. And I got to tell you, in a matter of a few weeks, I was able to present the project, find the right type of support. And 6 weeks after winning Badwater, I find myself down in San Pedro de Atacama, which was the first designated desert that I wanted to cross. One, because it was the logistically easiest one to put together. It was only 1,000 kilometers and down in Chile. So, you know, let's say politically safe. if we want to put it next to the Sahara, that was very, very simple. One country only, politically safe. And so we took off in a group of about 8 to 10 people. So guides, you know, doctors and support crew and everything, couple, like 2-3 Jeeps. And we took off for what became probably one of the best, or definitely the best experience to that point, up to that point. We crossed that desert in about 8.5 days through high winds and, you know, high altitude with was like a couple of days that we were cruising at about 13,000+ feet. So over almost 4,000 meters with the big Andes in the back rising. And, you know, it was just a wonderful experience for the fact that we were out there. We were out there soaking it up. There wasn't expectations of any sort. I didn't have to win. There was nobody I was running against, just me and myself and the crew helping me out. So sleeping under the stars and running 12, 15, 18 hours a day, 120+ kilometers on average per day, that really stripped me down to the core. And there, it allowed me to create a much deeper connection with myself while exploring the beautiful environment. And, you know, I found myself out there for hours and hours and hours on end, completely by myself, but I never felt alone. There was a deeper sense of belonging, that it wasn't just within myself, but with that nature. There was a sense of being there and feeling at home. Didn't matter how hard it was, didn't matter how cold or windy or hot or anything. It's that type of understanding that I was seeking, and that's what I got.
I absolutely love that. And people who have spent hours by themselves in nature, whether that's they go in for a hike and they haven't seen anyone else, or they go out and do one of these extreme races like the Marathon des Sables or, or Badwater or anything like that. And it might even be one of like the biggest race they ever do, but they will spend hours and hours by themselves. And I think a lot of people who I've spoken to, and most people who have that experience, will have that. I was alone, but I didn't feel it. And I think you having that experience in Chile is just amazing. So then 2019 came about. It's like, here we go. It's all happening now. The next desert, we're going out to Mongolia to do the Gobi.
That's right.
And just, I want to be really mindful of your time, but just briefly give us a bit of a recap of your Gobi experience.
Yeah. So, well, to give the better idea, the project that I embarked on was to cross the four most extreme deserts on the planet. So Atacama in Chile, which is the driest place on Earth. And then the Gobi, Mongolia, as you just mentioned, 2019. And then the goal was to, you know, tackle Antarctica, which is the frozen desert, and then leave Sahara, the biggest one, last. Of course, you know, 2020 came around, a few setbacks, and now we are in between. But as you mentioned, in 2019, I had the great fortune and privilege to be able to reestablish that support. And with the same team, we took off for Ulaanbaatar, and we drove for 2 days east, right by the border with China. And from this really tiny little settlement in the middle of nowhere called Bayan del Ger, we took off at dawn, and for three something weeks, crossed the almost 2,000 kilometers east to west to finish right by the Altai Mountains. I gotta tell you the truth, that is to this moment, the greatest adventure I've ever lived, the greatest expedition. It made the Atacama look like almost like the appetizer.
If you could, like, I can see it in your face, and the listeners won't be able to see it, but your face just like lit up right away. I knew you weren't going to say the toughest thing because your face lit up before the words came out. I could see that you were excited about it. Can you sum up the greatest adventure? Can you sum up in maybe a sentence or two, not why it was the greatest adventure, but with a little bit of time, a few years past, what that adventure means to you?
You allow me to really to embark in something enormous. Allow me to challenge the greatest feat of endurance that I ever undertook. And you also allow me to confront the hardest nature I've ever had to confront. You know, I did run in the Yukon before at 40 below. I have run in Badwater at 54 degrees Celsius. But the extreme of that desert and the beauty of the desert was unparalleled. You know, waking up, in the dark and start running early in the morning and living each sunrise and sunset while crossing this vast land. Mind, we started from this little town, and for 700-800 kilometers, we encountered nobody and nothing. We then had one outpost in the middle of nowhere, Dalan Zadgat, which is the highest, the biggest center in the south of Mongolia. And then from there, pushing westward, we had a section of about 1,000 kilometers where there was nothing and nobody. Places that not even the guides have ever been to. They're like, nobody goes there. There are no roads. There's nothing. There's literally nothing. You're in the middle of nowhere. And it, at times it felt like being in an ocean. And you can imagine, you know, if you ask me what is the one moment, the most special moment that you can pick out of everything that I've ever done. And it always comes down to a dawn in Mongolia while I find myself running among a herd of wild camels and wild horses. And there's a picture of it that one of my team members, the crew, was able to catch. And the dawn, the sun rising behind me, because I was running east to west. So the sun rising behind me and the camels and the horses running wild, and I'm running along them. And I'm like, this is insane. This is an experience that it's so stuck in my mind that is, you know, it always comes back to that, you know, the simplicity of the moment, the curiosity of exploring myself. But more than anything, it always comes down to the connection.
That is beautiful and a great way to end our episode. And thanks so much for sharing that experience. And I'm looking forward to seeing that image. Mickey, I want to say a massive thank you to you, my friends. It's been one hell of a journey the last hour. I've enjoyed it. And I've no doubt that we will stay connected and go down a few of those rabbit holes in the future.
Oh, yes. Well, look, it's been a great privilege to connect with you as well. And I really enjoyed the interview. I think that we are, you know, in many ways speaking the same language. And so it's it was great to kind of bounce the ball back and forth and share the same, you know, our approach and our journey into ultra endurance. So I hope the listeners will enjoy, you know, what we shared, and I look forward to connect with you again soon.
Thanks, buddy. Everyone, I definitely want you to go and check out Ultra, top model to top ultra runner on Amazon. And Mickey, where can people come and connect with you? If they've got any questions and things like that, where can they come and find you online?
Yes, well, I'm pretty much present on all social media platforms, but I'm the most active on Instagram. And you can find me at Mickey, M-I-C-K-E-Y, and my last name, Graglia, G-R-A-G-L-I-A.
Sweet. I will put some links in the show notes. And Mickey, once again, thanks, buddy. I totally appreciate you and I appreciate your time.
Thanks so much.
Go and enjoy your day, my friend.
You too. Happy running.
Thanks, mate. All right, everyone. We've done it. Another great episode here on the Luke's Lowdown Podcast. I think I'm going to go and listen to that back because there are so many golden nuggets in there. Mickey is an absolute superstar in so many ways, and he's not a bad runner as well. All right, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to the Luke's Lowdown Podcast. Remember, like, subscribe, tell your friends, and I will chat with you next week.